Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome everyone to Party Friday with Chuck Bonneville and Julie Hayden. It's the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, true straight up.
That's right. The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, along with HappyTrees.co. Okay, so Ken Buck continues his full rhino swamp descent.
Liz Cheney wannabe.
I think he's out Cheneying Liz Cheney.
Nah,
but we're going to have yesterday, or earlier this week, actually, a guy by the name of Trent Lisey, a Weld County patriot, been to Mar-a-Lago, has ties to Trump. I mean, launched his campaign to primary Ken Buck. We've got Trent coming up, joining us at 3:30. Also, we have coming up here at 3 o'clock, as soon as Thomas gets him on the phone, retired Colonel John Mills. I want to talk about, he was with the Defense Department, cybersecurity, and has some interesting thoughts on, what's he say? Okay. Okay, he's trying them now. Some interesting thoughts on how everybody being Israel and the United States, missed the attack. But in the meantime, just to bring you up to speed on the whole Speaker of the House, so they tanked, they stabbed Jordan in the back, right?
They had a secret vote whether he wanted to continue to offer him as their nominee for Speaker, and they voted pretty clearly they didn't. Of course, the most popular Republican, Trump endorsed everything else. The problem is the House of Representatives, the majority in the House of Representatives are not pro-Trump, and they're not pro-grassroots.
Here, and I'm going to have you keep doing that because John Mills is calling us as we speak. So, Thomas,
okay.
All right. Yeah, never mind. All right. Oh, this is live radio. Hey,
live
Thomas,
radio. You're seeing behind the screen.
Thomas, try him again. He was just calling me. it's like, but I can't answer him. I'm on the air. But yeah, so the third vote failed. So now they're starting from scratch. And it doesn't seem like, okay, granted, obviously, I'm biased here. I agree with what Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan and those people are doing. But they at least had some principal reasons for doing it, right? That McCarthy didn't keep his promises.
Yeah.
And they said, if you don't keep your promises, we're going to do this. So they did it. The swamp creatures who are blocking him seem to be doing it largely just out of, pardon me, but pissiness, basically.
Well,
right?
I mean, they have somewhat of a point. Why should we play by the rules if all the others don't play by the rules? But it's also gotten to the point where you have a lot of rhinos and they're making sure
they're rhinoing. They're rhinoing.
Yeah.
They're rhinoing. Okay, we've got Colonel Mills with us now. Colonel Mills, author, The Nation Will Follow, The War Against the Deep State. He has was a retired from the defense, was a cybersecurity expert. And we want to talk about what happened in Israel and with Hamas. So, Colonel, thank you once
again. Welcome to the program, Colonel.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for coming back.
Hey, Chuck and Julie, thank you. An honor to be back on your show.
So your recent column, did the Obama-Biden team tell intelligence to put all things Israel and Hamas below the cut line on the intelligence priority stack? And the column is great because you kind of explained how it works. It's not like they have interns necessarily cutting out headlines and they tape it and hand it to the president. How does it work and what do you think happened here?
Well, what we run in the intelligence community is it's a literal stack of priorities and of different topics and named operations. So it's a priority stack, and the intelligence community budget is large, but it's not unlimited. And you literally have a cut line drawn where, you know, things above the cut line get collected upon and get analyzed and actioned. Now, things below the cut line might actually be collected upon, but it doesn't mean that they'll necessarily be analyzed and actioned. So this is a real critical thing that the House and the Senate Select Committees on Intelligence should demand to know immediately is we need to know on October 5th, what was the stack and was all things Israel, Iran, Hamas above or below the cut line? So if it was below the cut line, why? Why was it below the cut line? Who gave the direction?
Did you see Kash Patel's appearance on the Steve Bannon show? He identifies the person who's in charge of that at the White House is somebody called Maher Pitar, who they had a photograph of in Palestinian gear, you know, urging the end of apartheid in Israel. But that was the guy who apparently does the stacking. at least he's the one who purports to, you know, make the decisions, I guess, with input from a lot of people.
Yeah, so there's kind of a singular person at the White House staff at the National Security Council that kind of runs the list. But there's a number of people who provide input, but in the end, it's a presidential decision.
Well, he can't make a decision.
Yeah, well, yeah, Joe Biden. Yeah. Well, and Laura Loomer is tweeting just about an hour ago that she has a source that's telling us that this Maher Pitar guy apparently did, and I don't know about the cut line, I want you to explain a little bit more about that, but apparently did say we're going to deprioritize Israel and Hamas. Have you had any insight into how something like that might work? And if he says that, might there be somebody who could say, I'm sorry, but Hamas, should we actually be paying attention to Hamas? Or how does that work?
Well, yeah, there is a number of people who have input on this. So there's not just a single person who racks and stacks and then redetermines, because the priority shifts often. It is a regularly shifting stack of priorities. So, there's a number of people, all the directors of the 18 intelligence agencies, under the DNI, everybody has a say. There's a lot of input into this, and everybody bears some responsibility on this. But in the end, there is decisions, and in the end, the blame line, like it or not, whether he's cognizant or not, it is the president who really sets the priorities. And so that's how this thing works. And so we got to know, was it, now if it was above the cut line, and now we're hearing this little game going on is people are talking on background, and that's swamp speak for that's usually in today's environment, that's Jake Sullivan running to his little buddies in legacy media. And that's what the game they do is they say, hey, here's our position. You just can't tell who it came from. And then reporters and legacy media run around and pretend like they were Maxwell Smart hiding in the the mailbox on the street corner, and they actually got some breaking news. And it's Jake Sullivan, feeding the warmed over baby food to the the legacy media, and them just doing whatever they're going to do. But so we got to know, was it above or below? Either way, it's bad. And this can be handled. This can be solved really quick here and very easily. If somebody says they gave it to Israel, okay, fine. There's message traffic on this. We need to know, and then the American people own this. It's, but the intel committees immediately need to demand to know. We want to see the message traffic. They have all the clearances. We want to know exactly who said what to who. So it's just, we're not going to accept somebody talking on background of the media saying, oh, yeah, we told Israel. Okay, fine, because this is how it works. So, okay, let's see the message traffic. Exactly who said what to who to warn Israel. And then you read the message traffic and you go, well, I wouldn't have taken action upon this. It didn't make any sense, or this wasn't really a warning, or, maybe Israel, and so there's two sides to the failure here. There were intelligence community failures. That we've really been talking about the American side, but let's talk about the Israeli side. Yeah. And the Mossad is great. Mossad is awesome. But the Israeli Defense Forces are awesome, but these are not the Mossad and the IDF that you and I grew up with. Okay, they've had 20 relative years of peace. They're not the battle-hardened veterans from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, okay? And I don't mean this in any way as a criticism, but they are not the battle-hardened veterans where life and death was on the line every second. Okay. Also, you have to be real. We have to be totally honest, and Israel needs to be totally honest. They really had deprioritized security along the Gaza border. It's just, you know, about the 10 miles that go in, you know, come in from the Mediterranean, and then it goes about 30 miles roughly down toward Egypt, and then you got the ocean side. Let's just be totally real. It was a deprioritized, underfunded mission, and they were depending a lot on artificial intelligence and autonomy to, hey, you know, instead of having a large manned patrol, let's just have a single autonomous vehicle go by every hour or something like that. It's just really, okay, so this show kind of shows the limits of, you know, this autonomy thing is interesting. Maybe it's more efficient. Maybe it reduces the exposure of friendly forces, et cetera. But, you know, it's concerning. And then also this one thing immediately caught my attention. Was the single Israeli tank burning, one of their pictures from the earth from the morning of the 7th. Well, okay, let's see. Tanks work best when they're on the move in mass formation, in numbers.
Okay.
A single tank moving slowly as a patrol vehicle is a very, very bad idea and very very wrong use of tanks. They're vulnerable. A single tank moving slowly is very vulnerable. You learn really quickly, just like in Iraq, the terrorists learned really quickly how to mount an M1, you know, shoot the tank commander in the head while his head is down into a hat and he's distracted, and drop a grenade in. Okay. So this is not how tanks should be used. So as soon as I saw a single tank like that, I said, okay, classic misuse of armor. So we got problems on both sides of the house, but also we've never seen anything like this. The greatest amount of ordnance fired in the shortest amount of time since the 1973 war, followed during the barrage by a very complex coordinated ground assault through at least 15 breakpoints through the wall. In the end were really terrorist one-way mission, but still very complex, very coordinated, planned a year in advance. Nothing like this has been seen since 73. So that was 50 years ago. We haven't seen anything like this in 50 years.
And, so in a generation, basically.
A little rusty.
Couple generations.
Let me
ask you, how do you view the reports that Egyptian sources warned Israel 3 days before the attack?
I think it is something very possible and plausible and should not be dismissed and taken. People are going, oh, they did it. Oh, and again, it's very simple. Let's see the message traffic. I'm in the room with the Egyptians and the Israelis and other air forces. They actually work very well together. So, and then they have standing information sharing agreements. So it's very plausible and possible that Egypt did say something. But again, what exactly did they say?
Right.
And how exactly was it shared?
I covered, you know, cops and crime and stuff in Denver for years. And you would always, it would not be, and I'm sure this is the same kind of thing. It wouldn't be uncommon to like, okay, so there's going to be an event. And they're like, there are rumblings that the motorcycle gang is going to do this or that. Well, okay, what do you do with that? And then you're like, that's far different from at 2 o'clock, 40 motorcycle guys are going to descend upon there and start, you know, so I think you're right. But you have a good point there. That message exists. It's not like this was like on somebody's Instagram account. Even then it would exist. So they should ask to see it.
But what is their ability to actually get them to show it? I mean, the Biden White House will claim executive privilege and slow walk it and just not do it.
Biden can only claim executive privilege on White House communication. So the communication between the intelligence community and Israel, if it exists, did not go through the White House. It went from the intelligence community straight to Israel, probably seeing the White House. So he can't claim executive privilege on that. So
well, they'll claim ongoing investigation. Right, yeah. Or they'll claim we don't care.
Yes. Well, that's what talking with Colonel John Mills. Let me ask you this. I'm going to go back to this kind of the stack kind of thing. To put it in perspective, how many things, and I imagine it probably ebbs and flows and changes depending on what's going on. I imagine they probably moved it up in priority, but how many things are in this? I mean, are we talking hundreds? Are we talking five? I mean, Okay.
No. I mean, you're talking hundreds of such requirements. It's called, and it's, if people want to nerd out on Intel community policy, just go to the DNI website. It's called ICD, Intelligence Community Directive 204. It talks about the whole framework, and that's the whole basis. So you can, it's public facing. Anybody can go and read it and nerd out on IC policy. But again, even if it was below the cut line, it doesn't mean it wasn't collected upon.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that it was analyzed in action. That's the tragedy. Because if you go back through the tapes, everybody goes, when something like this happens, everybody is supposed to go back and look, and they go, oh, son of the gun. Yeah, right. We caught it, but it wasn't above the cut line.
But this sounds like
how many are above the cut line?
Well, he was saying hundreds.
No, it's just hundreds in the stack. How many are above the cut line?
Because it's all a function of amount of available resources, how much each one of those priorities consume. I mean, there's not a fixed number.
But so just generally speaking, I don't
know. Would this be hundreds?
There is no generally speaking. You're dealing with hundreds of intelligence priority requirements. And it depends. It's a calculus of a number of different factors on where that cut line goes up and down. And it does change regularly. That cut line goes up and down all the time. But again, there is message traffic documenting this. The Intel committees have total access to this. And the Intel committees will thwack the Intel.
Should be able to figure it out. Well, I mean, we've all seen, at least I've seen Tom Clancy's, you know, Jack Ryan, right? And Jack Ryan is always trying to wave in the document saying, look at this. And like, oh, Jack, go away. So it sounds like that actually happens. Well, let me ask you this about the intelligence they get. I mean, those of us in like the lay world, you know, we think that like spies meeting all over with secret messages and things like that. Where is this intelligence coming from? I mean, is it people reading the newspaper? Is it people doing surveillance or all of the above? Or where does, when we talk about
all
intelligence?
Of the above. Well, I mean, there's, you know, people, you'll talk about signals intelligence. We have basic categories. You have human intelligence. You have overhead intelligence from spy satellites. So imagery intelligence. You have measuring and measurement analysis intelligence. You have all these forms of intelligence, and some of them kind of are really multiple forms of intelligence, but we just have all these capabilities. And again, even in the DNI site lists the budget at the end of the year, it's now law that we release the budget. This is the black budget. There is nothing else. There is no more. There's nothing hidden there. That it's everything. Is that inside of that dollar number released? And just go to the GNI website and you can see that. We're not limitless. But the basic dynamic here is the Israelis, Mossad, MI6 in the UK, they're very, very good when they focus on a specific topic or issue. They're very good, but they don't have the bandwidth.
Okay.
The problem with us, just taking out wokeness, taking out, you know, corruption, except like that, we have broad bandwidth. We've just historically found a challenge in focusing.
Okay.
So we collect everything, but we're not always good about really making sense out of it. They're really good at making sense out of it, but they have limited ability. Yeah. They don't have the broad capability. But that's where we have the Five Eyes, the five English-speaking nations. We share very closely with each other, and we have all these information sharing agreements with key allies and partners, such as Israel. So there's a lot of sharing that goes on.
Well, let me ask you about this. Back to sort of my cops and crime thing. I mean, there would be a time, you know, you cover criminals, and every time the police would get a tactic and a strategy, right? It didn't take very long, particularly the gangs and the drug cartels, to adapt, right? And in a way, it almost it almost seemed like they were always a step ahead. Does that happen like with terrorist organizations too? Because it sure seemed it happened here that they adapted to or have adapted to some of the sophisticated stuff. I mean, it seems like they did this very well. I don't know. I mean, what's your sense of how they carried out? And is that true in terrorism as well as just in criminal gangs?
Yeah, your two examples you've given were perfectly spot on, and exactly the same situation applies. I mean, the law enforcement intelligence is the same situation. And here, the threat, mischievous minds will always evolve to evade. They will all just like prisoners in a lockup in the county or the state or the federal prison. They'll always be clever on how do they sneak something into the prison.
Right.
Same thing here. They're always going to be coming. They're always going to be clever and adapting. And here it's called operational security. The terrorists did a very good job of staying off the phone, staying off the email, staying off of electronics. And the operations order they took off of a dead Hamas terrorist. I read through it. I was just shocked. That clearly had the fingerprints of Iran on it. And again, this is not Hamas attacking Israel. This was China destabilizing the world.
Wow.
Because Hamas works totally for Iran. Iran is they work for China.
Right.
So the operations order they found, clearly Iran had been working with them. It's a very detailed plan, very detailed operations order. It looks American, and which tells me, because the Iranians mimic everything we do, and the formats for these plans, they're totally unclassified. You can find them on the internet. They're on DOD and U.S. government websites.
Wow.
And they clearly modeled and mimic our operations order, and I was just stunned at the detail of the plan. And again, the plan was dated like a year before, so this attack didn't come out of thin air.
Right, right. Well, and that makes it, like you said, you look at how detailed it is to a certain extent, to me too, that kind of makes the intelligence failure even worse. Is that fair to say? Because it's been out there. If somebody had, you know, had been able to see it or spot it, or is it the kind of thing, I also would say that sometimes it seems to me, you know, it's a kind of thing that in hindsight, right, it was obvious, but in real time, it wasn't.
Yeah, this is, just like, why didn't we catch the Islamic terrorists taking flight training before 9/11? Why didn't we connect the dots on that? Same thing here. It really does beg the question. But, now we also have the factor, we haven't talked about this, is Rob Malley, the chief Iran negotiator, who's off the payroll now, but he's under investigation. He's on an unpaid status. Let me clarify that. But
okay.
He was the chief guy for Biden. And it turns out, or sure looking like he was an Iranian spy, and two of his chief assistants were Iranian spies. So the whole question is, was Iran influencing? Did these two help hide the operation? Were they influential in putting the priority below the cut line? Because this is a serious, serious breach. We all know there's corruption in the Biden White House, but this takes it to a new level and angle now that we know there's three Iranian spies inside the Biden team.
Well, and it seems like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that's obvious that would have been part of their job. Now, how much they knew or didn't know, but it would seem to me that clearly part of their job would be to downplay anything like that and point the finger at other stuff, right? Because it seems to me that they don't seem to have had very much in the way, I guess, what I would call human intelligence, right? It wasn't like they had somebody who was undercover in the Hamas. I mean, it doesn't even sound like that's the kind of thing that's possible anymore, is it?
Mossad has good eyes and ears inside the Hamas structure, but somehow this failed. But Hamas is also super wacko paranoid about Mossad spies inside their organization. So they're, executing each other every day because they're so whacked out paranoid that somebody's a spy for Mossad. But somehow this was able to do this. Yeah, Mossad pretty good about human intelligence inside these networks, but somehow things got missed.
Well, and it seems to me kind of underlying the overall thing that you're saying is there are kind of two ways that things can be missed. And one is just sort of with accidentally, unintentionally, right? With just the sheer volume of stuff that comes in and what do you make of it? But I think what you're saying, if I'm right, is what Congress needs to do is look into, was there sort of an intentional putting this stuff below the radar? And it seems to me like with these spies and some of the Biden administration policies or some of the people in place, it's certainly worth asking whether this whole situation and the information was intentionally put below the radar, right?
Yeah. And it's documented. Every time that stack goes up or down, our things are rearranged in the stack, it's documented. There's literally a justification memo written on this date. It was determined to adjust because of this. And here's all the people who signed off and et cetera, et cetera. So there's forensics on, when and why the stack was reordered, why the cut line was moved, et cetera. So these things are all documented. It's just not somebody moved it and nobody knows why. It's a pretty formalized process.
Let me ask you just sort of a final question in terms of, with all of your experience, where should we go? Number one, I agree with you. Number one, we should find out exactly what happened with this information flow. But above and beyond that, where do you think we should go now?
Well, and there's kind of a debate raging on our side of the ledger, I see, because there's some who say absolutely zero support for Iran, for Israel, zero support for Israel, and there's others that, we've got to get, absolutely engaged. And I think we need to, this has to be looked at in the full context of what's going on. Everything as of now, it's all about the no boundaries agreement with China at the lead, but with Russia, Iran, Venezuela, North Korea, because we found North Korean arms with the Hamas terrorists. We also found some of the weapons we gave to Ukraine with the terrorists. This is what's going on. We have to be careful about becoming decisively overcommitted in this situation. We need to provide Israel with logistics support, intelligence support. We already have ballistic missile defense interceptors over there. We've had them there for decades, okay? We need to provide the ballistic missile defense, but we cannot become involved and bogged down in another forever war.
Right.
And Israel doesn't want to become involved. Israel is handling this, very, very carefully and judiciously, because they know right now, phase zero was the planning phase by Hamas. Phase one was the Saturday morning, October 7th. Now we're in phase two, which is the information war. And Israel knows they will lose the information war if they come across as just as horrible as this attack was, and Hamas needs to be eliminated, to every single one of them. But they have to handle this very carefully, always differentiate the Palestinians from Hamas.
Right.
They're not one and the same. I mean, Hamas, most of them are Palestinian, but that doesn't mean all Palestinians.
No, it is a quagmire. Hey, Colonel, I hate to interrupt you, but we got to let you go now. But real quick before I do, though, you've got some great books out there. Where can people get your books and find out more about you?
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. WarAgainstTheDeepState.com. WarAgainstTheDeepState.com is where the book is, the new book is at. Also, Colonel Rhett John, Colonel R.E.T. John, Substack, Getter, and Truth.
All right. Thank you so much for your time and your analysis. Those are some great questions. I appreciate your time, sir. Have a great Friday.
Oh, thank you. Hey, great. Looking forward to being on your show again soon.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Thank you very much. That's Colonel Retired John Mills. He does have a great Substack column. I go there and I read his Substack stuff too. And he's got a book. It's The War Against the Deep State. I think we wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about every time I keep thinking we need to quit beating up on Ken Buck. And then he does even worse stuff, right? And I think I saw Trent. Trent, if you were there in the Zoom room, if you want to go ahead and turn your camera on and unmute yourself, you can go ahead and do that. But there we go. Oh, there you go. Hello there. No, as you know, Ken Buck once again, you know, is voted against Jim Jordan. His reasons were incredibly stupid. His follow up is incredibly stupid. And I was watching on Twitter, and I've never met you before, Trent, but I see this guy, Trent Lisey, is all of a sudden like, if I've had enough and I'm running. So I called and I said, can you come on the show? And he's like, sure. So Trent, first of all, let me say hello. Thank you for your time on this Friday afternoon.
There we go. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. So,
well, yeah, let me, before we go, I guess I'm going to ask you to go. I've got your videotape from Twitter on this morning, and then we've got Ken Buck whining about his pesky, stupid constituents. So we'll play that too. But first, let me let you just kind of introduce yourself to folks, because and why, just talk about why you decided to get into the race.
Yeah, my name, you know, like you said, is Trent Lisey. I'm running here in Congressional District 4. You know, I'm a small business owner here in Colorado in agriculture. I work with farmers. I have a couple other businesses that I do. But, you know, I grew up, I was born and raised here in Colorado. And I'm really passionate about this state and about this this country. We're hurting right now. So, and we have a congressman right now in the House who really is out of touch with the American people and those here in Congressional District 4.
Right. Well, and I would go for, well, first I want to say, I've seen some of your Twitter pictures, and you do have friends in high places. There's a picture of you with Donald Trump. I think you've got it on your website. You've got pictures with you and Jim Jordan. So you do have friends in high places.
Yes.
But let me go ahead and show, because I would say it's even worse than Ken Buck is out of touch. Ken Buck just doesn't even care. And to explain, I mean, he could care less. I want to play, this was Ken Buck on Meet the Press, basically whining about his pesky constituents. Oh, that's so horrible. If we could please play Thomas the Buck number one video.
Let's talk about what happened at that meeting today, because apparently there was some reporting that McCarthy shouted at Matt Gaetz to sit down. Were you in that meeting? What did you witness?
I was there for 3.5 hours, Kristen. It was painful. Kevin McCarthy went to the microphone several times, and as the person who was last speaker was granted the ability to speak as often and as long as he wanted to, Matt Gaetz got up and wanted to make a point. Kevin told him to sit down. At that point, temper started flaring a little bit. It was no more than a minute and a half of a 3.5 hour meeting, but there was some tempers, clearly. And I think after that point in time, people backed down again. And part of the reason that there's temper right now is this constant barrage of phone calls. I have 6 full-time people answering the phones. I have 20,000 messages from people where we couldn't. So far, I've had 4 death threats. I've been evicted from my office in Colorado. I have notice of an eviction because the landlord is mad with my voting record on the speaker issue. And everybody in the conference is getting this. So it's natural. Family members have been approached and threatened. All kinds of things are going on. There's going to be some tension.
Okay, now trying to ask you, that's to say you were elected to Congress and you had to hire 6 people full time to answer the phone calls from angry constituents. Would you complain about the constituents, or would you say, "Gaw, I wonder if maybe I should"? I mean, it seems to me he's forgotten who he works for, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, 2 days ago or 3 days ago, he said the grassroots movement, those who, you know, are in this grassroots movement that want change in Washington are silly. And it's just like, are you kidding me? You know, and it's interesting, today we were in front of his second office, the one in Windsor here that he claims he's being evicted from. And I confronted his director and I said, hey, is he being evicted from here? And he said, and she said, no, we're just in lease negotiations. And it's like, he just said he's being evicted. And so to me, it's like, you know, do I think that death threats, you know, that's bad. Nobody should be doing that. But the credibility of this man is shot. It's out the window.
Well, that's in the police report, right? If you've actually had a death threat, that's in the police report.
Well, he said he gave it to authorities.
He gave it to authorities. He hasn't done it.
Yeah, no, he said he did. Knock him down.
Just like he says that Joe Biden shouldn't be impeached because there's no evidence.
Right.
Those stupid January 6th people.
Well, in Colorado, as you know, there's the grassroots and there's the establishment. establishment rhinos. So he must identify himself with the establishment rhinos. That's who he must think he represents.
Well, that's what it is. But really what he represents right now is CNN, because that's where he wants to go. So he is going to represent the people at CNN the way they want him to represent, so that he can get high dollar money to sit there and bash this movement, America First movement, and the patriots who want to change in this country.
Right. And I want to give you credit. I'm going to play your videotape too, because, you know, again, you've had, got on out of the starting gate pretty fast. You were, and I'll ask you a little bit about this more, but you were apparently down doing a peaceful protest, and like a legitimate, real peaceful protest at Ken Buck's office in Douglas County. If we could please play the Lycee video, Thomas.
Hello, Patriots, here in Congressional District 4 in Colorado. My name is Trent Lycee. I am running against the Rhino Ken Buck. I'm outside of one of two of Ken Buck's offices here in Castle Rock, Colorado, and we showed up here to peacefully assemble to support Jim Jordan as the next Speaker of the House and to express our disappointment that our representative, Congressman Ken Buck, has not been representing the people here in Colorado. You can totally see that the intimidation factor here when we got here this morning is in play. There's been law enforcement around the building. We've been approached by the building manager, who has insinuated to us that we were here to violently protest inside of Ken Buck's office. I assured him that no, we are here to peacefully assemble and peacefully show our support for Jim Jordan as the next Speaker of the House, and that we don't believe, and that I don't believe, that Ken Buck is serving the people and his constituents here in Colorado and Congressional District.
There you go.
Which is true. He's not.
Yeah.
And again, not only is he not, he gets all whiny about it when they call his office. It's like, so what, number one, who would you have voted for if you were there? Who would you have voted for Speaker?
I'd have voted for Jim Jordan.
Yeah. How come?
You know, because it doesn't make sense, you know, because Ken Buck's out there saying, well, I don't like Jim Jordan because he's an election denier, but then he doesn't like Emmer either. And so it's like, well, then what are you? You know, just get out, go ride your horse into the pasture in CNN and leave the folks here, you know, elect me so I can represent these people the way that they want to be represented in Washington.
You know, and that's a really good point, because if he doesn't agree with it, you're right. Why not just shut up and quit? I mean, he could be Doug Lamborn, right? I mean, in this case, like I said, I mean, even Doug Lamborn voted for Jim Jordan, right? And I mean, he could just be.
Well, he also voted against McCarthy. I mean, he voted against McCarthy. He voted for everyone, against everyone.
Yeah. I have a good friend who wanted me to ask Chuck, is Ken Buck going crazy, or is he having a midlife crisis?
I told him he already had a midlife crisis. That happened 10 years ago.
And I don't think he's crazy. So what do you think is, I mean, are you serious about, you think the CNN thing is legit? Because I kind of do myself.
No, I do. I believe. I mean, I have talked to people who are close with Ken Buck who have said that, you know, that's his motivation factor. I've talked to the state party chair here, and that's his indication. Was on Dan Kaplan's show yesterday, and that's his indication. So I think it's a pretty good. I think he's going to probably bow out of this thing after the first of the year. I would assume he's going to have some protege of his step into the race on his behalf, but you know, anybody tied to Ken Buck, it's just not going to go anywhere.
No,
right.
No.
Well, talk about then how would, I mean, that's it. Let me ask you some basic sort of questions, and just so folks get a sense of where you are on the whole January 6th thing. And I know it's a big topic, but in general, what are your thoughts about that and the way the Department of Justice is handling it?
Well, I mean, it showed us that we have a two-tier justice system in this country. And for the fact that Ken Buck has been adamant about the fact that those people should be rotting in the jail cells because what they did, you know, was so egregious. But yeah, we have liberal DAs throughout this entire country that are letting convicted felons on the streets with no bail. And so that's been proven. And these, you know, to me, the real insurrection was on November 4th.
Yeah.
What?
Well, let me ask you, what do you think about more aid to Ukraine?
I think we need to stop giving money to these countries. I mean, look, we funded Iran with the $6 billion.
Yeah.
And then we funded, you know, Israel, which Israel should be, they're an ally of us. We should support them. But then you have the $86 billion that he left in Afghanistan, you know, that right. Biden left in Afghanistan when it came to the military equipment that we had there. You know, so we are responsible for funding what is going on right now.
Right. Let me, one thing too, I always like, because you've got a little bit of a political background. Is that right? You've done some stuff in Weld County. Tell us about that.
You know, so after I got out of the military, I came back here to my home roots in Weld County in Windsor, and I served on the school board for one term, and then, you know, ran again in 2021. Currently, I sit on the Weld County Council here in Weld County. But for me, you know, I have people ask me all the time, well, you know, you don't have a lot of political experience. You haven't held a lot of political offices. The people that are holding a lot of political offices that go from one to another, to another, to another, are the problem in this country.
Right.
You know, we've got these people dying in their in office because they can't, they just don't want to leave. And that's the problem. I mean, the good people who are in Congress today are those who didn't have any political background.
Well, let's talk about Weld County. I mean, the Republican Party there has been pretty well taken over by the Rhino establishment. How'd that happen?
Yep. You know, it's incredible. I mean, it's, you know, I ran for GOP chair back in February. They did everything they could to stonewall me by not providing me with the information that I should have been provided with to be able to contact PCPs, to be able to promote why I want to be the GOP chair. You know, and it's like the establishment is so rooted, and really it has been for the last 30 years. I mean, when we 30 years ago, I was involved in, you know, as a kid, you know, knocking doors, walking the streets, you know, helping candidates get elected. And it's the same people then as it is now. And mm-hmm. it's shot, you know, no good America First candidate and somebody who truly believes in the grassroots and the conservative values, they're pushed out. Good volunteers. I can't tell you how many volunteers have said to me, you know, I don't feel welcome here because they don't take me seriously. They don't want me to be involved.
Right. Now that happens in Adams County too, where we have ongoing fights about who is and who is not a district captain. Well, so I want to ask you a sort of a blunt question, and that's talk about money. Cause in the end, it kind of comes down to that. And I've seen a picture of you in a tuxedo with Donald Trump. Apparently, are you guys like this? Are you guys like Buzz?
I wish I was, but you know, he's the rightful president and he'll be there again in 2024. And when he takes office in January, but you know, when you talk about fundraising and you talk about, you know, this grassroots movement, I mean, since Monday, I mean, this has just been an absolute whirlwind for me. This is something I never expected, that it was going to be this big and blow up this fast. And I've had money, you know, people donating $5, $10, $15, you know, $50, $100 throughout the entire United States. And it has just been amazing to see that support. And the fact of, you know, how many people in this country want representatives that are going to put their interests before foreign entities or those flowing over the southern border.
It seems like every time Ken Buck goes on MSNBC or CNN, it's like a fundraiser event for you. Is that,
I mean? It is. I mean, he is doing me so, it's amazing what he's doing. I mean, he's campaigning for me. You know, every time he opens his mouth, it's like, go on there every day, you know, help me out because you are doing a great job.
Well, it seems like in looking, I mean, your website is great. The Twitter account, all of the stuff you do, it's very professional. So I get the impression that although you rolled it out this week, this must be something either that or you're really efficient, but that you've been thinking about doing for a while.
Well, you know, I would say about 3 months ago, really when the January 6th deal came out and that disgusting letter that he put out to Todd Watkins down there in El Paso County. And then, I mean, at that point, I'm like, okay, there's got to be a change. And my heart flipped and I just felt like, okay, it's my time. And so, yeah, you know, I did some work for the, you know, for a couple months trying to figure out, you know, the logistics and how I'm going to do this. And, you know, it's like, it's, I've got four people right now on my team. They're incredible people. They're amazing volunteers. And it's just, you know, it was a perfect day on Monday to launch. We were always trying to figure out, you know, what's the day? When should we launch this? And finally Monday, we're like, you know what? With the Jim Jordan thing, it's done. We're coming out.
Right.
And well, so it's, yeah.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. It is, because I think – there had been a long time sort of this. I mean, years ago, we went to a Ken Buck fundraiser, right? Mm-hmm. That he wrote the book, Drain the Swamp. And so I think he, for a while, was kind of living off of his reputation, but everything.
And who'd he bring? Mm-hmm. It's Cheney.
Oh, yeah, to the fundraiser. But what I mean, though, is it seems like that he has revealed himself totally for who he is. And he has totally revealed himself as somebody who does not care about his constituents. And I think that your timing is very good, because I think maybe some of the people who weren't paying that much attention, you thought, well, no, Ken Buck mm-hmm. is one of us. He's making it clear anymore that he's absolutely not.
Well, we had former Congressman Tam Tancredwan, and he was saying, well, you have to understand about Ken Buck is that when he first got to Washington, he told Tom that I want to be like you. I want to have some issue that makes me a maverick. And President, well, why don't you do something on immigration? No, I won't do that. Mm-hmm. But he's just looking for something. He didn't have to believe in it.
Yeah.
He just has to have something. So now he's found his thing, persecuting January 6th defendants
and
making
people.
A fool of himself.
Yeah.
I love Todd Watkins' response to Ken Buck. That was great.
Yeah. Well, you know, the book that he put out, you know, I think that was his early memoir that he put out, you know, because he is the swamp.
Right. Exactly. Well, Todd, let me final, I guess, two more questions, and I'll give you a chance at the end to let folks know how they can donate. But just sort of open-ended, anything we haven't asked you about, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you more as this goes on, but that you would want folks to know.
You know, look, this is going to be, I feel like, a very heavy watched race in this country.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, because Ken Buck has just self-destructed as a so-called conservative. And so, you know, this is going to be, I feel like, the most incredible grassroots movement that we've seen. And the outpouring in this district from people all the way from Campo, Colorado to Julesburg have reached out to me and said, you know, I've never seen Ken Buck. He's never been in my county. I don't even know what he looks like, you know, and it's like, you know, I'm going to be somebody that's going to be out there. Yeah, there's 27 counties in CD4, but I will be in every county, you know, visiting with the people. It's going to take everybody going door to door, you know, telling these people we got to have a change. And there's a big number of people that don't vote. And we've got to tell them and convince them why they need to be voting, because, you know, we have a lot of work in this country to do. And we've got to get Joe Biden. We got to get him out of there. We've got to get that administration gone. We've got to get Trump back into office to be able to fix this. And, you know, it's going to take all hands on deck to get this done. Well,
before that, what do you think about the opt-out?
I feel like that the Republican Party is hurting themselves by allowing unaffiliated voters to vote in the Republican primary. I think it's ridiculous. You know, it's like these unaffiliated voters are not voting for conservative candidates. They weren't voting. You know, they were voting for Joe Day. You know, they weren't voting for Ron Hanks. And so I believe, you know, we need to return back to the days of only Republicans voting in the Republican primary. I will say I'm glad that the state party finally stepped up and said, okay, if you're going to petition on the ballot, we're not going to support you, mm-hmm. you know, because this is a grassroots movement.
Good. Perfect answer.
You're getting 100% score so far.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Where can people go and find out more about you and donate or volunteer? Final question for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's going to take money. You know, you always have to ask for money. They can go to my website, www.trentlicey.com, or follow me on Twitter at RealTrentLicey. There's a donate tab on my website, and there's also a volunteer sign up, and they can follow the rest of my social media from my website.
All right.
All right. Well, it's great to have you on, and we'll be following you and wishing you the best. And
thank you. Have me on anytime. I'm here for you.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Trent Licey.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great Friday. Okay.
You too.
All right. And just so folks know, Licey is spelled L-E-I-S-Y. Yeah, I recommend go to the website. And I guess he's right, though. Ken Buck, maybe he could just sit there. You can't, but sit there and just wait and, you know, just keep watching Ken Buck. Unless he said
something. He's saying, you know, he's really promoting Licey's campaign.
Yeah, he is. He's helping me out. I love it. So.
Everybody, that's going to do it for us. I want to thank Trent. I want to thank Colonel Mills, all of you guys on Zoom. We didn't have time to get to your comments. Remember, you can catch all of the shows at chuckandjulie.com. Great thanks to Thomas. And we're off to Party Friday.
Well, I'm not.
Oh, Chuck is not. Me and Rev are.
Well, I'm not feeling exactly party-esque, but
it's golf party Friday. All right.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
See you on Monday.